in the Chevalier de Sigil.
A knightly order?
The knightly order of the Sigil.
Yeah. After he began writing in French, following
what
his
second... What do they do?
Second...
They steal food at the beach? What are they?
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
My announcement's been redacted.
And Ryan.
Oh, my God. Eggs are more expensive than they've ever been. I went to Publix earlier.
Yes, eggs are more expensive.
The prices are not going down. They're going up.
Well, don't worry. RFK on the job. Those birds are going to be living healthier than ever.
Yeah, they didn't just kill 100,000 ducks at a duck farm in New York for the fact that they might have bird flu.
Avian flu is going to come. I promise you.
It's okay though, Ryan. Ryan, calm down. Okay, we canceled all the research at NIH and the CDC, so we're good to go, you know.
I mean, I guess you can't have it if you don't know.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I have the worst cold I've ever had, you know. My fingers are falling off. It doesn't make sense.
He has to have zinc. Yeah, you get the zinc.
You got to put some zinc inside some candy cigarettes and smoke them, you know.
This is how literally every apocalypse movie starts. Oh, you know, we just stop researching stuff and somebody got sick and nobody knew what it was. And before we knew it, everything just went to shit.
Nah, I mean, usually they start with trailers and then they turn the lights off, you know. But I haven't seen that yet, so this could all just be fucking bullshit. Actually, his whole presidency just reminds me like of a CW version of a bad presidency so far. You know, it's unwatchable. It's cringy and unwatchable.
It's an after-school special on UPN.
Oh my God, UPN
in between Judge Judy and the People's Court.
Because what channel was UPN down here? Like up north, I think UPN was like 9. Like it was
9 or 11. Like all those weird channels.
Yeah,
I think here it was 8. In like Central Florida, and it was 16 was its actual like designation.
So like we had like 2 and 3, I think, were CBS, 2 was CBS, 3 and 4 were NBC, 5 was Fox, 6 was ABC, 7 was also ABC. It was some kind of like secondary ABC thing. 8 was like a bastard channel. Like I don't know what the fuck was on it most of the time.
7 was like that WESH News Channel 7.
Like yeah, that. Like WESH News, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then 9 was like whatever the fuck that week decided to pay for 9. You know? 10 was also CBS, 2 and 10. And then 11 was like whatever, like, you know, Living Single reruns, whatever the name of the channel was.
UPN.
Yeah, it's probably UPN. It was either UPN or the CW, or I think that wasn't the UPN. Is UPN like purchased by CW at some point?
Yes.
Okay. There you go. UPN, yeah, that was UPN then.
UPN became the WB channel, and then it became the CW.
Got it. Okay, that makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
And 12 was PBS. 12 and 13, which again will be gone shortly. So you know.
Wait, 12 and 13. PBS is channel 2 at my house.
No, that was CBS in the Northeast.
Oh, wild.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of TV channels,
speaking of things that are gone or that will be gone soon,
you know who would love TV if it existed during this time?
I don't know.
John Dillinger.
When Alessandro Cagliostro.
Oh, we're talking about the Count of Cagliostro?
What did you just call me?
Cagliostro.
You heard me.
Remember, GLI in Italian is Li. Cagliostro.
You can't talk like that anymore, Steve. You're going to get deported.
I know. That's great.
All right. So we're talking about Caligula today?
No, I'm great. I'm good. I got birthright citizenship.
I was going to say, like, if he wants to deport me to Europe or something like that, like, please no. Don't. Yeah.
What are you sending me on vacation? Like, what the fuck's wrong?
No,
with you?
Please don't.
Just please give me a deck of cards or something to take with me, you know, so I can busk.
So a lot of the history of the so-called Count of Cagliostro, Alessandro Cagliostro, is shrouded in a lot of like mystery, rumor, propaganda, and mysticism.
So wait, before we go, who is this guy again?
He is a major figure within occult circles. For instance, Aleister Crowley claimed that he was one of his like past lives.
Okay.
He's a major villain in the Lupin the Third animes.
Okay, but was he in the Dark Knight or was he in the Dark Knight Returns?
Both.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, there was a flashback. So technically both. There were a lot of efforts done to sort of figure out his true identity when he was arrested in France for his possible participation in what was called the Affair of the Diamond Necklace, which we'll talk about later, which was a big political scandal and sort of the end of France before the French Revolution.
The end of France?
But the end of the French monarchy for that time period.
Gotcha.
You know, the monarchs are like roaches. They keep coming back no matter what you do. You put out the peanut butter traps, you know, you get some of them, you think you're good, but one, ten, you know,
behind the wall waiting to come out.
You know, it gets cold and they start coming into the house from outside and it just becomes a whole big thing, you know. The German writer, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, he relates in his Italian journey that the identification of Cagliostro was that of one Giuseppe Balsamo, which he got, which he was able to figure out through a lawyer from Palermo, who, upon official request, had sent a dossier with copies of pertinent documents to France.
Now, this is called the, I believe, the balsamic dressing of the theory.
Dude, but, something I had when I went to Italy was balsamic dressing just on some really, really good cheese, like a drop on some cheese. Bro. Game changer.
Am I right? It's like balsamic. Good balsamic is I have certain like metrics I use to judge restaurants. So like an Italian place that sells just, you know, like your standard American based Italian food fare, like, you know, pizzas and subs and stuff. I always check the meatball parm. First thing I order.
Okay.
I want to know what it's like. What kind of bread did you use? Did you cook the cheese on top or did you actually get the cheese inside the fucking sandwich? You know?
Ooh.
Are these meatballs store bought? Are these meatballs like fresh and spiced? Like, you know, I want to know what's up there. And
meatball parm is your barometer.
That's my barometer for, yeah, Italian places. But like, I think balsamic is also a good barometer. Like, if they have a good balsamic, oh my god, so good. There's a place around the corner. Oh, there's a place around the corner, dude. You could drink the shit. It's so good. It's fantastic. Anyway, enough about the balsamic dressing.
But Goethe, for those who don't know, was like one of like the biggest, most influential writers in German.
Yeah, he wrote Faust, right?
I think so.
Pretty sure.
Yes, it was a sort of adaptation of the, yeah.
Nah, he wrote Faust, bro. Like it's he used something to write it, but
yeah, it's based on a story, like a story that existed before, but he wrote the actual like
this most man's famous throwing book, shade Faust. On Goethe.
Hey, Steve, I've had up to here with you and your Goethe. You son of a bitch.
I think the problem with Goethe for you is that he just had terrible balsamic dressing when you went over for dinner one night.
He is German.
Yeah,
so.
But he tried, Steve. He tried, all right?
I know. Oh, no.
Oh, no, oh. It's bad.
Mine roast is it's like smoke's billowing out
mine
of the kitchen.
Mine roast.
My Sharona. What?
Mine roast.
Goethe met the lawyer in April of 1787 and saw the documents and his and the pedigree of the man, that his great grandfather was a Matteo Martello, who had two daughters, Maria, who married Giuseppe Bracconeri, and Vincenza, who married Giuseppe Cagliostro. Maria and Giuseppe Bracconeri had three children, Matteo, Antonia, and Felicita, who married Pietro Balsamo, the son of a bookseller, Antonio Balsamo, who had declared bankruptcy before dying at the age of 44.
I swear to God, I feel like you're narrating the Bible to me. And Zechariah was born to John.
No way, dude. There's not that many Italians in the Bible. What the fuck are you talking about? I mean, they would love it if there were, but, you know.
This is the new King Giuseppe version.
Yeah, they're kind of the faceless stormtroopers of the Bible.
Yeah. Vito was born to Tony, who was the son of Vivian, who made the best mozzarella. Oh, listen, Vivian, her Sunday gravy, listen. Anyway, she was daughter to Frankie.
Well, now you're talking about just New Jersey at that. Specifically North Jersey.
The son of Felicita and Pietro Balsamo was Giuseppe, who was christened with the name of his great uncle and eventually adopted that surname too. Felicita Balsamo was still alive in Palermo at the time of Goethe's travels in Italy, and he visited her and her daughter. He wrote that Cagliostro was of Jewish origin, and it may be that the name Balsamo comes from the Hebrew Baal Shem, which Cagliostro himself publicly asserted that he was a disciple of Haim Falk, the Baal Shem of London.
Okay.
Cagliostro himself stated during his trial during the affair of the diamond necklace that he had been born of Christians of noble birth, but abandoned as an orphan upon the island of Malta.
Isn't that where Napoleon was? Or am I crazy?
No, Napoleon was at St. Helena and the other island, but it wasn't Malta. He was on smaller islands.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Elba.
Yeah, Elba.
Yeah, Elba.
And Malta is a pretty big island. It's pretty big in like money laundering. If you're familiar with the Panama Papers,
the Knights of Malta.
The Knights of Malta too,
with the Maltese Falcon.
But the journalist who broke that, she was from Malta and involved like one of the high up people in the Maltese government, and they blew up her car.
Oh shit! Oh shit!
He claimed to have traveled as a child to Medina, Mecca, and Cairo, and upon return to Malta, to have been admitted to the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, with whom he studied alchemy, the Kabbalah, and magic.
Okay, it's kind of cool.
But Giuseppe Balsamo was born to a poor family in Alberghiera, which was once the old Jewish quarter of Palermo, Sicily.
Okay.
Despite his family's financial situation, his grandfather and uncles made sure that he received a solid education. He was taught by a tutor and later became a novice in the Catholic Order of St. John of God, from which he was eventually expelled.
Why?
I like how you said novice. That's what they fucking think they are.
Why did he get kicked out? I mean, it's easy to get kicked out of a Catholic order. Ask me how I got kicked out of Catholic Sunday school, but why did he get kicked out of the Catholic order?
He just wouldn't wear the robes, you know?
I don't think there was a record cap, but I imagine it has a lot to do with his character.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah, I guess Catholics didn't really vibe with the whole magic and alchemy thing.
During his time in the order, he learned chemistry as well as a series of spiritual rites. I'm sure like Catholic orders are sort of wary of like going too deep into like occult type things, because that's kind of what like got the Templars in trouble.
Right, but chemistry is just normal shit. It's not like alchemy that they're trying to pull.
True. in 1764, when he was 21, he convinced Vincenzo Morano, a wealthy goldsmith, of the existence of a hidden treasure buried several hundred years previously at Mount Pellegrino. The young man's knowledge of using his knowledge of the occult, or knowing of his knowledge of the occult, Murano reasoned would be valuable in preventing the duo from being attacked by magical creatures guarding the treasure.
Magical creatures guarding the treasure. Yo, no, those are just the Nestle employees guarding the San Pellegrino water. That's all that is. It's just armed guards with Nestle patches on their fucking shirts.
Guys in like Rent-A-Cop uniforms with assault rifles.
I swear to God, dog, I can't wait for the water wars to come. You got Coca-Cola privateers versus like Pepsi, and they're fighting over fucking spring water.
Well, that's what they talk about, the Coca-Cola roller wars, you know, from Who Started the Fire.
God damn it.
It's all coming back. Time's a flat circle, baby. A flat
fucking circle. Anyway.
In preparation for the expedition, though, Balsamo requested 70 pieces of silver from Rano. When the time came for the two to dig up the supposed treasure...
Why did he want money from him first? It was just kind of like a...
He read about it in the Bible. He was like, I want some silver, too.
But I mean, like, why did he want it first?
He heard about what Judas got, and he got greedy, you know?
He's like, I don't trust this guy. You look kind of shifty. I don't know, man. You look like
Giuseppe. He needed it. He needed to bribe the ghosts or monsters that guarded the treasure.
I guess so.
When the time came for the two to dig up the treasure, Balsamo attacked Murano, who was left bleeding and wondering what had happened to the boy. In his mind, the beating he had been subjected to had been the work of djinns or evil spirits.
Nah, he just beat your ass and took the money.
The next day, Murano visited Balsamo's house via Persietta. Since then, renamed via Conte di Cagliostro, where he learned that the young man had left the city.
Oh yeah, so he guilty.
Balsamo, accompanied by two accomplices, had fled to the city of Messina. And by 1765 to 66, he found himself on the island of Malta, where he became an auxiliary or a donato for the Sovereign Military Order of Malta and a skilled pharmacist.
Wow. His friend's such a nice guy. Such a nice guy. He says, listen, I think this guy beat me up and stole my money because evil spirits are in his head. Not because he's a piece of shit. But because evil spirits were in his head. That's a nice guy right there.
He just stumbles back into town. We got rolled by ghosts.
Them ghosts got hands, man.
Cancel all my credit cards.
All right, ghosts, let's go. Oh, damn, ghosts got hands.
They ran in my pockets. I don't know what happened. They took my keys. I can't get into my house. They took my car.
In early 1768, Balsamo left for Rome, where he managed to land himself a job as a secretary to Cardinal Orsini. Balsamo found the job to be boring, and he soon started leading a double life, selling magical, quote-unquote, Egyptian amulets and engravings pasted on boards and painted over to look like paintings.
So this dude finds entertainment in the occult, and then he wonders why he found a job for working for a cardinal boring. Come on, man.
Of the many Sicilian ex-patriots and ex-convicts he met during this period, one introduced him to a 14-year-old girl named Lorenza Serafina Feliciani. Known as Serafina.
Serafina Feliciani.
Why do I feel like this is going to go in a bad place? Because you had to mention she was 14.
Whom he would marry 17 years later in 1768.
At least he waited. 1768.
Okay. Listen, bro. Knowing what we know of this time period, there's no way that he actually... I mean, okay, maybe he waited to get married, but, like, come on, dude. It's gross.
Yeah, it is.
What is... Like, what are you arguing? That it's... That anyone here thought it was not gross? Like... Yeah, it's gross.
I mean,
I just said he at least waited till she was 17.
Yeah. Yeah.
17, 16, 8.
I guess it in the 1700s, 14 years old is like middle age anyway. So I guess, you know, whatever.
You're right. He's not wrong.
She already had three kids and a pension.
She already had a 2-pack-a-day habit.
She'd already been married and divorced. Yeah.
Third time's the charm. I keep telling him.
I'll keep telling him I do. Oh, wait, like, no, like, she's like Italian.
She's an old spinster at 14 years old.
Che ti succede, eh? Non ti preoccupare.
Man, a fucking useless smoking a cigarette on the porch.
She's just wearing like a nightgown and smoking a cigarette. Like
she takes a big paw, dig like a big piece. I'm sorry. She just takes like a big drag off a cigarette, looks right at him, and goes, "Ma quattordici anni," and he's like, "I don't give a shit if you're 14. Let's go."
Like
fucking terrible.
Like, I think it was Sherry O'Terry's character from SNL where the bit
what
where she was.
What the fuck happened to her? I haven't even heard that name in a long time.
But she was like the mom who was always wearing like the always sending out her son, which was David Schwimmer, and the one to get like to go get like the thigh highs for him, and he kept getting beaten up.
Jesus. I guarantee you that David Schwimmer is going to play Sam Altman in some documentary in the future.
Oh, guaranteed.
Well, he was great as. What's his name? Kardashian.
He played Kim Kardashian?
Shapiro? No, he played Kim Kardashian's dad.
Robert Kardashian?
Robert Kardashian in the O.J. Simpson true crime story. Remember Cuba Gooding Jr. is O.J.?
I don't watch that shit. I don't care. I don't give a shit about O.J. in any way.
There's a lot of good quips. Like,
he's dead.
Put together of him saying juice.
Hey, Juice. It's me, David Schwimmer, Juice.
The couple moved in with Lorenza's parents and her brother in the Vicolo della Cripte, adjacent to the Strada dei Pellegrini.
Enemies of the Strada dei Bloods.
Balsamo's coarse language and the way he incited Lorenza to display her body contrasted deeply with her parents' deep-rooted religious beliefs.
Yeah, you're inciting a 14-year-old to show her tits. Yo, I would be kind of concerned, too.
Let me see your butt, huh? There was some guy that I got to ask my brother about it. It was some guy that, like, was at, like, I think he was working at JCPenney at the time, and that's how the guy would, like, hit on people. Just be like, hey, girl, let me see your butt.
What the you fuck? Ask her.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
So after a heated discussion with her parents, the young couple left.
Oh, so, okay, so this sounds like some old Maury Povich shit. My mom won't let me show my titty, so I'm moving out.
How about that? Cash me outside.
At this point, they have befriended an Agliata, a forger and swindler who proposed to teach Balsamo how to forge letters, diplomas, and a myriad of other documents.
Nice. Okay.
All right. Criminal life. Yeah, I'm going to get you in there.
This was in exchange for Agliata being able to have sex with his wife.
What?
which Balsamo acquiesced.
What? What the fuck is... God damn it. I don't like this guy. I liked him before, but I really don't like him now.
The couple traveled together to London, where Balsamo, now styling himself to be one of several pseudonyms and self-conferred titles, before settling on the Count Alessandro di Cagliostro.
How about Count Alessandro de Cuck, because you let some other dude bang your wife?
You know, he's just in the lifestyle, you know.
He's sitting there in the cuck chair in the hotel, wondering
gonna
where
be,
he went wrong.
He's gonna be on Tom and Bunny, you know. He's not a single guy. He's, you know.
So is this just like is this what like the show White Collar is like based on? Like this man's life.
It's like the movie A Decent Proposal if it was only like 5 minutes long.
Hey, I got a proposal. Let me fuck your wife. All right. Credits.
Credits. I think it'd be hilarious if it was like a full, remember how movies in the 90s before they'd start, you'd go through like 5 minutes worth of credits at the beginning of the thing.
That if one like wholesome narrator. The all new thing from Disney where your family can go and this is great. No,
but there's always like serene.
Next
like,
up, Death Blood.
But no, it's always like serene like shots, but it's like produced by all the actors that are in it, the title of the movie. If it has like a 5 minute intro and it's like, hey, let me fuck your wife, and then boom, roll credits. And then 10 minutes.
Hey, let me see your butt. All right. I'm out of here.
Is this them doing the Predator hand clasp and then just freeze frames for the credits? So he also during this time period claims that he met the Comte de Saint-Germain.
Ah, Comte Saint-Germain. That's another one.
Who we've talked about in the past. But for refresher, he is another sort of like mystical con man that existed in the 18th century.
Yeah, we did an episode about him, right? Two episodes?
I believe we did a two-part on him.
We're fucking so like bogged down and under this weight of the 143 episodes we've done. I can't fucking remember anymore. Like, I'll hear people talk about shit. Like, I'll hear people talk about, like, what the fuck was his name? See, I can't even remember his fucking name when I want to remember it.
Troy Film
Thomas
Lysenko.
Sankara. Yeah, or Trofim Lysenko. Or who's the other guy that was in Africa, the big, like, leader that got killed?
Oh, Patrice Lumumba.
Yeah, Lumumba's was in the news, like, a couple weeks ago, I think. And yeah, I was like, oh, I know who that is.
Troy Film Lysol, right? He was an answer. He was an answer on Jeopardy like a month ago, and I was like, hey,
I know who this is. I can't think of it. Fuck.
Fuck you, Ken Jennings.
No, I believe I yelled Troy Film Lysol, I believe is what I said. And my roommate looked at me like I was insane.
Sorry, we were looking at it for the form of a question. It is also Trofim Lysenko.
I would like Trofim to answer Lysenko. Who is Timberland Little John? All right.
Now I would like Potent Potables for 600.
Oh, God, that's my favorite category.
Oh, my God. There's a website, by the way, if you're into Jeopardy, that has like every Jeopardy board and questions going back to the beginning of Jeopardy, and you can
love Jeopardy.
You can sit there and like you can actually like play Jeopardy on the site. It's kind of fun.
I watch Jeopardy like it's a fucking series every day at 7:30. I watch it. If not, I have it recorded so I can go back and watch it. That's so I can like watch like people who win and shit like that.
I love Jeopardy too, but I don't watch it every night anymore.
But as we were talking about the Count of Saint-Germain, he rose to prominence in European high society in the mid-18th century due to like being involved in a lot of sort of mystical stuff and then also claiming to be
shake
nobleman.
Your ass. Watch yourself. Well, you said mystical stuff.
Yeah. He also associated himself with some high-level, like, high-society contemporaries during the period, such as Casanova, Voltaire, and Mozart.
No, okay. I'm sorry, I got mystical stuck in my head. I'm sorry. Get on the phone! The count right here. He's in jail, though, for being a rapist, so, unfortunately. So there goes that. Unlike Pete Hegseth, who's now the Secretary of Defense.
God, you know, he leads a military better after he's had like five drinks. So.
It was one of the most egregious downgrades
allegedly,
I've ever seen in my life. Just I cannot even believe.
Allegedly, the morning of his confirmation hearing, he had three martinis for breakfast.
What is he fucking Justice Beer?
Yeah, it's just
Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
He loves. That's all they would do. They'd lift weights and drink beer, you know, because all they did was drink beer. So they had to work it off.
Oh my!
Listen, the absolute worst confirmation hearing was Pam Bondi. It was just, it was like a toddler, right? Like a toddler who got caught doing something and just wouldn't admit it.
She fucking enabled. She's the only reason the Trump University case didn't go anywhere. She basically just washed it away for him. Like, it is open corruption. It's just unbelievable. Anyway, we're not going to go down that road. Mystical individuals, let's go back.
The Count of...
Danger!
Danger!
The Count of Saint-Germain, though, would claim that he was make claims such as that he was 500 years old, and Voltaire had dubbed him the Wonder Man because he had, quote unquote, he is a man who does not die and knows everything.
I trust Voltaire.
You sure about that?
Charles, the Prince of Hesse Castle, is recorded as to having called him one of the greatest philosophers who ever lived.
All right, slow down.
Yeah, he's up on the throttle, for fuck's sake.
Pump the brakes, Turbo.
Cagliostro traveled throughout Europe, especially to Courland, Russia, Poland, Germany, and later France. His fame grew to the point that he was even recommended as a physician to Benjamin Franklin during Benjamin Franklin's stay in Paris.
Yeah, he needed somebody to prescribe him massive amounts of penicillin for all the hookers he was
getting. Yeah, I was going to say, Benjamin Franklin, he had crotch rot, like, permanently. There's a reason he got a lot done. He was always at home suffering.
Actually, these are the days before penicillin, so it was more or less just Benjamin Franklin going through this guy and just be like, look at my penis. What is wrong with it?
Well, I think your penis is ill. Your penis is ill.
You need a shot of morphine to the penis.
I think during this period they would use mercury.
I think what you want to do is you need to exsanguinate that penis. What you do is you take some birch wood and water and you stick it in there for a fortnight.
Using mercury as medicine is the reason why their life expectancy was like 7.
Danger.
On April 12th, 1777, Joseph Cagliostro was admitted as a Freemason of the Esperance Lodge number 289 in Gerrard Street, Soho, London.
Also known as, I believe, Joey Cags and
Joey C to his friends.
Joey C to his buddies. Yeah, you know. Keep it familiar.
You know, if you're from the street, you know, if you're from the block, that's what you called him.
Yeah. Only person calling me Joseph Cagliostro is the judge.
The only person who says that to me is my mother.
And even the judge says, Mr. Cagliostro. No one says Joseph. Like when he said, Mr. Cagliostro, why were you jaywalking?
In December of 1777, Cagliostro and Serafina left London for the mainland, after which they traveled through various German states visiting lodges of the Rite of Strict Observance and looking for converts to a Egyptian Freemasonry that he was starting up.
Cagliostro and Serafina sounds like a goddamn DJ, like a shitty Eurotrance DJ group.
There's no such thing as shitty Eurotrance. It's all good, baby.
In February of 1779, Cagliostro traveled to Mitau, nowadays referred to as Latvia, where he met the poet Ilse von der Eck.
Latvia.
Latvian Orthodox, Jerry.
Got the Mallorca. In September of 1780, after failing in St. Petersburg to win the patronage of the Russian Tsaritsa, Catherine the Great, the Cagliostros made their way to Strasbourg and then to France. In October of 1784, the Cagliostros traveled to Lyon, and on December 24, 1784, they founded the Co-Masonic Mother Lodge, La Sagesse Triomphante, of his Rite of Egyptian Freemasonry at Lyon. In January 1785, Cagliostro and his wife went to Paris, and in response to the entreaties of a Cardinal Rohan.
Okay.
In terms of like Egyptian Freemasonry, it's something that pops up after his time. But it's sort of like a combination of like a number of lodges, but he sort of gets the traditions going.
Okay. So just going back, we are still talking about our titular Alex Cagliostro, correct?
Alessandro Cagliostro.
Born Giuseppe Balsamo.
Okay, so yeah. Joey Cags, Joey C, Mr. Cagliostro, that was just a name that he was going by just to get in the club to be a Mason?
Well, not like just sort of get into high society. It was like
DMX, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of Earl Simmons. So
why didn't he just use his regular name? You know?
Because DMX sounds cooler than Earl Simmons.
because it sounds cooler. You know, you're saying
I'm going to give it to you. DMX.
I'm going to give it to you, cowards, and it's going to be quick.
Because what was Jay-Z's?
How many?
What's his?
Carter, Sean Carter, or something.
It's not Sean. It's something else.
It's Carter.
Yeah, it's Sean Carter.
It is Sean Carter.
Yeah,
I know a
yeah.
lot about hip hop for some reason.
Because there's that one album. I think it's the Black Album that starts with the interview with his mom.
Yes.
Yeah. The
Black Album.
Jay-Z was a yeah. It took 14 hours for him to get out of my coochie. Yeah, like she was just saying all kinds of weird shit in the beginning.
She's like, now Sean, he would just sit in the kitchen and he would just sing.
He would just stare at the wall.
So something that I've learned in my later years is that like all this, a quick digression here, but like all like that like hard gangster rap shit that we knew growing up, most of it is bullshit, right? Like a lot of these rappers are like theater kids. Like
yeah, there's a thing about Tupac being like a theater kid, and like it's hard. I mean, but listen, he wasn't.
Tupac's mom was absolutely involved.
Yeah, Fanny Shakur. She still fucking wanted. Is she dead? I don't know if she's even dead.
I think
she's got to be dead by now. Regardless.
Well, his mom's dead. His aunt is still in Cuba, as far as we know.
So there are a couple that were like legit, right? But most of like the rappers and shit like that, they may have come from bad households and stuff, but they were like theater kids, right? Like they grew up, they weren't like the hard gangsters.
I wouldn't say most.
I'm not talking about like today.
I wouldn't say, I would not say, don't use the word most. Like, in fact, you should probably get most out of your vocabulary. Like every time I say most, I'm inevitably let down by finding out it was a small number, you know? It's not most.
Okay. I'm going to put it this way then. DMX is one of the first like real motherfuckers that come from that shit. Remember how many times this dude got locked up for selling crack as a fucking major rapper?
I lived in fucking, and as if I don't say it all the time, but when I lived in Jersey, there were fucking news reports all the time about him getting pulled over on like the Garden State Parkway going 90 miles an hour. He doesn't have a driver's license. He has 6 suspended licenses. He has no insurance. He's high. He's
impersonating a federal officer.
Dude, he lived the life. Like, let's just say it. Like, that's, the dude that's lived the life, man.
Is the cops pulled him over. The cops pulled over DMX and he shows him a federal agent badge. I'm like, dog, you are DMX. Like, it's like Shaq Puffy, trying to be like, no, I'm on the cover. No, you are Shaq.
Like P. Diddy, I hope he rots in fucking prison for the rest of his life. But
his
dad, I think, worked for Frank Lucas. Like, they were serious gangsters. Yeah. Man. Like, we're not talking about
Diddy wasn't.
But like, Diddy fucking MC Hammer. Go look up MC Search when he talks about how MC Hammer had a fucking contract off on his head with the Bloods because he made fun
had
of
a very nice upbringing
because he said but, word to yeah, your mother on a tape. Like some of those people, yeah, they were serious.
But Behind the Bastards did a series of episodes on Diddy and they talked about his upbringing. Even though his dad was involved with like Frank Lucas,
yeah,
like his father died when he was like 2 or something like that,
right?
And like Frank Lucas died like not long afterwards.
Like yeah. he went to like private
or went to probably. Yeah. So he was so. But I was just gonna say my favorite
sort of clip. Oprah Winfrey, Behind the Bastards was really good.
I don't know if it's still on the internet, but there was a radio interview with DMX. And he gets to the studio or whatever, and they ask him like how he got there, and he has like a suspended license. And he drove, and they're like, "You have a suspended license."
You know, they just gotta catch me.
I told you guys that story before. Like one morning when I was in high school, we had the big boombox in the fucking living room, and it would randomly turn on. It had some kind of alarm function on it, and I could never figure out how the fuck to turn it off. I went through the manual. It would just like randomly do it. Like it
called
just,
being haunted.
And whatever CD was in the top tray, because it was one of those triple disc ones. So like whatever CD was in the top tray of the player would just start playing the first track. And one day, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, the thing went off. and it would started playing DMX and was just like, get him, boy, like that. And my dog started barking and ran out in the other room. My mom was freaking out. My dad runs out like, what the fuck? Who's in the house? It played like a skit. Turns out it was just DMX, bro.
Your dad comes out wearing his FUBU shirt.
Yeah. My dad had so much gear, but it was so funny. Like, my dad's the whitest, like, retired, you know, veteran guy ever. Super chill, right? But he used to just go to Burlington Coat Factory because the clothes were cheap, and everything there was, like, hip-hop culture. So he's, like, wearing Sean John and, like, FUBU and South Pole.
Wearing a Fat Farm jeans.
It's so funny. We're at church. He's got, like, Fat Farm on, yeah. And Nietzsche. Just like, what the fuck is going on? So funny, man. You gotta love the guy.
He's buying, like, gifts for girls. It's like, baby, you're Echo Red or Baby Fat.
There's Baby Fat. Yeah, they're pretty cool, right? I thought they were neat. These are sharp.
Cagliostro, though, was prosecuted, as I mentioned before, in the affair of the Diamond Necklace, which involved Marie Antoinette and the Cardinal Prince Louis de Rohan. And he was held in the Bastille for 9 months, but was finally acquitted when no evidence could be found connecting him to the affair.
You got any evidence for this case? No, I got nothing. Shit.
I know my rights.
That's okay. Trump's in charge. Keep him in jail forever.
Imagine
Attica.
Imagine being in the 1700s screaming about, I know my rights, in some French prison.
Rights? What rights? You have no rights.
They just stab you.
You have the right to shut the fuck up.
He's out in the oublette with, like, the Marquis de Sade.
Hey, what's up? I'm Sade. How you doing?
Mask just goes walking by. Oh, you think you got it bad, huh?
Yeah, well, let me take it off. You know, it comes off.
This was an incident that occurred from 1784 to 1785 in the court of King Louis the 16th, involving his wife, as mentioned, Queen Marie Antoinette. The queen, whose reputation had already been tarnished by gossip within the court and also among the subjects of France, was further sullied by the false accusation that she had committed a crime to defraud the crown's jewelers in acquiring a very expensive diamond necklace she then refused to pay for.
Wait, so they're saying that basically she was doing some hood shit?
Well, essentially what happened is that there was this woman named Jeanne de Valois Saint-Remy who was also sort of like a con artist.
Okay.
That sounds really familiar. Is she in any kind of media?
Probably.
Like fictional media? It sounds really familiar.
Probably. But she was the self-proclaimed Comtesse de la Motte. She was a French noblewoman and adventuress and thief who was married to Nicholas de la Motte, whose family's claim to nobility was dubious. She was an impoverished descendant of the Valois royal family through an illegitimate son of King Henry II. Although she was later convicted, the event remains historically significant as one of the events that led to the disillusionment with the monarchy, and that it was one of the contemporary scandals that gave moral weight and popular support to the French Revolution. So his father had had this diamond necklace commissioned for. King Louis the 15th had this diamond necklace made up for one of his mistresses, and that he died before it was done, and this jeweler was just sort of stuck with this necklace.
What am I going to do with a necklace that says King Louis the 16th on it?
That's like when send this to some poor people in other countries. We'll make a new one.
Yeah,
you can see a picture of it online. It is a very elaborate, like just massive diamond necklace, Jeanne de Valois Saint Remy, she wanted to sort of like be in on a scam of sort of being in on selling it to like the queen. So she forged a signature from Queen Marie Antoinette to sort of make it seem like she had signed off that she was buying it, and then try to force the crown to pay for it.
Okay.
Like you do.
And obviously, this is why Cagliostro gets pulled into this, because if you're going to find, like, if the signature was forged, you're going to pull in, like, you're going to do a dragnet for all the forgers in the kingdom. So you're going to grab him. But regardless of this, and that his innocence in this event, he was banished from France by order of King Louis the 16th and departed for England.
Get him the fuck out.
Get the fuck out of here.
He's like Trotsky.
Hey, where are my keys?
I've made it back. Hello, guys.
I believe I am allowed to come back now.
Trotsky is just like Grandpa the Simpsons when he walks in and sees Bart at the door of the West House. He walks
takes his
in
hat
and
off.
Turns around and walks right the fuck back out.
Takes his hat off, walks out.
Okay, goodbye, guys.
It was nice seeing you.
While he was in England, because remember, this is around the same time as Goethe is finding out his family history. He's accused by the French expatriate Vivenu de Moron of being one Giuseppe Balsamo.
Vivenu de Moron.
Which he denied in his published open letter to the English people, forcing retraction and apology from Moron.
Wait, wasn't Balsamo the dude that he robbed?
No, Balsamo is his like actual name.
Oh, okay.
The guy he robbed was Murano.
Murano, okay.
Yeah, the guy he robbed more was like, fucking moron.
More like Morano. Yeah, that's my right, guys.
The name's Dumas.
Cagliostro then left England to visit Rome, where he met two people who proved to be spies of the Inquisition.
Oh, shit.
Never expect it.
Spies of the Inquisition in 1780?
Yeah, the Inquisition operated until the mid-1800s.
Really? I didn't know that. Yeah. Holy fuck.
And there's one main reason why they got him, and it's the same reason as the last guy who got by the Inquisition. It's because he's a Freemason.
Yeah, it's a bad look for the Inquisition.
The Catholic Church, they used to be punishable in Catholic countries with death to be a member of the Freemasons.
I know, it's amazing.
It's also why they didn't let Catholics into the Freemasons. Yeah. It wasn't just they were being dicks. It was also like, yeah, the Catholic Church wants to kill us.
How do we know we can trust you?
We can't.
All right, let him in.
Cagliostro then left England to visit Rome, or like I said, and on December 27, 1789, he was arrested for attempting to found a Masonic lodge in Rome and was imprisoned in the Castel St. Angelo.
I feel like you don't want to try to build a Masonic lodge in Rome, of all places. I feel like they're not going to be too kind to that.
It's where they'll least expect it, but in this case, they expected it.
For some reason. They had their sights set right there.
The place with all the priests and the popes and the Inquisition didn't get past them.
Oh God!
He was tried and originally sentenced to death, but the sentence was later commuted to life imprisonment at the Forte di San Leo, where he would die on August 26th. 1795.
Or did he? Bomb, bomb, bomb.
Yeah, he probably did. Yeah. He's probably gone.
sorry, Steve.
No, he's alive, dude. Like Saint Germain. Saint Germain's still alive.
He's coming back. He just left the prison to get some smokes. He said he needs some breads.
This logic is the same logic.
He just needs a gallon of milk and his pack of cigarettes. He'll be right back.
That they felt, extremist you know, they, religious people use. Jesus is coming back, I'm telling you. Any day now. Oh, I died. Oh, fuck, he didn't come back. Fuck. That's all right. My kids will do the same thing now forever, and it'll make total sense.
Sorry. You know, they heard about the menthol ban, and they knew how much menthols meant to them, so the menthol ban was lifted, so they let him out of prison so he can go buy some.
You cannot ban this sweet, minty cigarette. Delicious. Newport cannot be banned.
Oh, my God.
The Portuguese author Camilo Castelo Branco credits Balsamo with the creation of the Egyptian Rite of the Freemasons, and intensive work in the diffusion of Freemasonry by opening lodges all over Europe and by introducing the acceptance of women into the community.
Hey, so he's only like 98% of a shithead.
It's all right, though, because Pete Hegseth, he's going to get those women out of there. You know, they're not qualified. Yeah,
it's going to be more manly.
as soon as they see those pink pussy hats, the women are gone.
And I'm just so happy that he's completely competent. You know, he didn't run two things into the ground and was a low-level fucking military member in the National fucking Guard and never saw active duty and is a complete drunk and paid a woman $50,000 to say that he didn't fucking rape her and has two kids where he can't go to their schools because he's barred from the premises. None of that happened.
Wow.
Yeah, none of that's real, but let's vote for him anyway. Ask me how I really fucking feel.
Shit, that came from a deep place.
I told you, I'm not mad. I'm going to stay aware of everything that happens, because if anybody even tries to fucking test me on this shit, I'm going to fucking eviscerate them.
The idea of a quote-unquote Egyptian Freemasonry was maintained in Italy by the Rite of Misraim, founded in 1813 by three Jewish Bederidae brothers. And in France, the Rite of Memphis, founded in 1838 by Jacques-Étienne Marconis de Negre. And these unified under Giuseppe Garibaldi as the ancient and primitive rite of Memphis Misraim in 1881.
The Garibaldi?
Yeah, the chocolate guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cagliostro was, as mentioned before, was considered to be one of the best forgers of his time. Giacomo Casanova... in his autobiography, narrated an encounter in which Cagliostro was able to forge a letter by Casanova, despite being unable to understand it.
No, it's not. It's Ghirardelli.
I was waiting for you to be like, wait a minute, it's not Garibaldi.
I don't even think they're Italian, by the way. I think that's like they're like Swedish, right?
I thought it was Swiss.
Yeah, whatever.
Probably Swiss.
Same country.
They're probably Italian Swiss.
Same thing, whatever.
I know there was one Italian that listens to this podcast that just heard us blow by that and was screaming furiously, like, what are they talking about?
They don't make chocolate. Don't fa chocolate.
Screaming at the Italian, like the Italian father, grandfather at the guy carving up the ham. The Serrano ham.
Notario. Oh my god.
But Casanova was an Italian adventurer and author from the Republic of Venice. His autobiography, The Story of My Life, is regarded as one of the most authentic and provocative sources of information about the customs and norms of European social life during the 18th century.
Didn't put much time into the title, did he? What do you want to call your biography? How about just like, you know, The Story of My Life?
Well, it draws people in. They say the story of my life, but whose life? And then they look down and they see his name, which is probably bigger than the title. And they're like, "Oh my god, it's a new Casanova."
Yo, new Casanova just dropped.
You know, he's like
mixtape.
He was known to use pseudonyms such as the Baron or Count of
Ron Mexico, like fucking. Michael Vick. Ron Mexico. Ron Mexico is the greatest fucking fake date name thing I've ever heard in my life.
Tim Apple is the best one.
Tim Apple's good. That is pretty good. Yeah.
That one's up there.
If you're in some limey white thing, you're trying to get a white girl. Yeah, but Ron Mexico will get you anybody. You could aim anywhere.
And the... Chevalier de Sigil.
A knightly order?
The knightly order of the Sigil.
Yeah. after he began writing in French, following
what
his
second... What do they do?
Second...
They steal food at the beach? What are they?
they steal cigarette butts, so they see if they still work. He gets a couple puffs out of them.
As a former smoker, I've been there, man. You're just looking for that one butt where someone didn't smoke it all the way, and you unfold it, and you go to town.
After he began writing in French following his second exile from Venice, he often signed his works as Jacques Casanova de Segal. He claims to have mingled with European royalty, popes, and cardinals, along with the artistic figures of Voltaire, Goethe, and Mozart. He also became famous for his complicated and elaborate affairs with women, that his name might be said to be synonymous with libertine.
Libertine? What's that?
Like somebody who's just like really into like partying.
Yeah, it's like a lewd person, you know, like someone who just goes out and does partying and shit.
Okay.
His final years were spent in Du Chateau, Bohemia, as a librarian in Count Waldstein's household, where he also wrote his autobiography. The occult historian Louis Spence comments in his entry on Cagliostro that the swindler put his finagled wealth to good use by starting and funding a chain of maternity hospitals and orphanages around the continent.
Oh, shit. Okay.
He carried an alchemistic manuscript, the Holy Most Trino Sophia, amongst others, with him on his ill-fated journey to Rome, and it is alleged that he wrote it. And as I said before, the occultist Aleister Crowley claimed that Cagliostro was one of his previous incarnations.
Yeah, of course. See, that's the ultimate, like, douchebag move. Like, I wasn't alive to know them. That's the equivalent. Crowley saying that it was one of his previous incarnations is the equivalent of Bill Gates writing a book about Richard Feynman saying it was his favorite teacher, even though he never taught him. In fact, he was dead before Bill Gates would even be able to be taught by Richard Feynman.
Yeah.
See, it's like, it's such bullshit.
It's the kid on the playground being like, I'm going to play as him. And you're just like,
yeah. My dad knows Tom Cruise. What? Who cares?
I mean, that's cool. You're probably just as tall as him. What does that mean?
Do you play volleyball?
Are you willing to play sand beach volleyball in jeans?
I'm just saying, what's your point?
I don't know how that was the artistic idea to go with, is we're going to have you play volleyball in jeans when it's the 80s, dog. You could have put some Catch Me, Fuck Me shorts on them, and it would have been inherently better and more fit with the time period and the style of fucking beach volleyball.
We're closing out this episode. We're talking about the volleyball scene in Top Gun, which was a big thing for Cagliostro.
You know, because I was just going to say, around. So Don Simpson worked on that film, and, you know, he was coked out of his mind. He's just like, I got it.
Have you ever heard the have you ever heard the Tarantino rant about Top Gun?
Oh, God. Can we imagine? Go ahead.
I'm not going to say it, but he explains that it's secretly a movie about a man's struggle with his own homosexuality. I'll post a link in the chat. It's I'm ridiculous.
I'm
kind of
like, wait, kind of? Maybe?
He uses, like, direct quotes from the movie, like how he says, you can ride my tail anytime, or something like that. And it's just like, come on, Quentin. I take anything he says with, like, an enormous grain of salt, though, because he's such a weirdo.
Who, Quentin Tarantino?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Also, his movies are just slowly getting worse. So, I watched The Hateful Eight, and I literally had trouble watching it because they just.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it was just like
I don't like The Hateful Eight.
It was okay to me. Like, I think it was okay. One too many fucking N bombs. My God,
time in Hollywood.
You didn't have to say that many N bombs at the movie. It was like.
Have you watched Django?
No, I kind of don't want to, just because it's like, it's not that it makes me uncomfortable, but it's like, it's just stupid. Like, it just feels unnecessary, you know?
It's his, like, signature.
I know. Right? It's his authenticity shit. It's like, okay.
Well, I mean, not even authenticity, it's just like his signature. Like, it's like that in so many of his movies, which is just kind of crazy. You're just like, every time they say it, it's like a slap in the face. And you're just like, well, I'm here, I'm paying attention now if I wasn't before.
Anyway, Cagliostro, dead.
Yeah, he would have been a real big fan of, you know, those movies.
Well, they're both in
Cagliostro
defeat.
Cagliostro would have been a huge fan of Tarantino.
They were both in defeat, you know.
Yeah, big feet guys. Didn't touch on that. If I did touch on it, it'd be a 5-part series.
So. 5 toes, 5 parts. All right. And with that, good evening.
Good luck.
Bye.
And don't let ice in. Fuck them.